Concession number 25935.
Mr. Hall, Rail 10. Now, we're talking about your time as a seaman aboard HMS Matchless at Scapa Flow, based at Scapa Flow.
Yeah.
Now, I believe a lot of the time you were on Arctic Russian convoys.
Yes.
We're very interested in this. Can you tell us as much as you can about that period?
Yes. First of all, my first impression was going to sea on a small convoy. We picked up from, I don't think we're actually going on a Russian convoy at this stage, because I'm just not long on the Manchester then.
Matchless.
On the Matchless then. And we were just having a small convoy. And this was my first experience of rough weather. And I mean rough weather. I'd never seen any seas like this. We were just with a small convoy. I can't remember how many ships were in convoy, but they were mostly, eventually they must have got scattered a little bit, and we got left with one merchant ship.
And where was it going to?
I think we were going to Iceland to pick up the other convoys, but we didn't make it.
Tell me about, what was it like in rough weather aboard the Murchison?
It was, in a word, horrible. The weather was atrocious. It was, in actual fact, we stayed with the freighter. She had engine trouble, and we tried to keep with her, and we were heading into the wind, and we were probably doing a rate of knots and going nowhere. We almost stood still. We lost a man overboard during that time, and we couldn't even turn around to pick him up. It was that bad that I don't think we could have made it, and I don't think he lasted very long anyway. I think it was gone in 2 or 3 minutes. But that was rough. The ship was shipping them right over the bridge, right along the waist. Anything that was on loose or nearly loose on the upper deck was swept overboard. But I was on the upper deck, and I suppose in my little way, it was quite an experience.
Were you not scared of that?
I probably was a little scared of wondering what was going to happen, but I think there was so much going on and so much noise, the wind and the spume coming off the waves. There was so much going on that you probably don't realise that you are getting scared. Anyway, we went back to I think the freighter went on her own. She made her own way back to port, and we went on to Iceland. And from there, we picked up my first convoy going to Russia. Russian convoys. What do I remember about Russian convoys? They were cold, wet, pretty scary at times.
Tell me about the cold. I mean, how cold
was it? The cold. I've cried for 4 hours with cold. Absolutely cold. Even though you've had a typical going on watch, going on to a pom-pom on watch of dress. I would have sea boot stockings, probably overalls, thick underwear, overalls, and probably a pair of trousers on top of that, a jersey, a scarf, a duffel coat, an oil skin, balaclava, and gloves, mitten gloves, you know, with just the thumb and a forefinger, like these sheepskin things, with woolen gloves on them, and they were tied round your neck. And that would be you'd sort of walk along the upper deck or climb ladders like a penguin. You know, I'm sure if you dropped over the side, you'd go straight to the bottom, with so much clothes on. But even then, it was cold. Even then, we were cold. The cold just seeped through everything. It really was cold. And most of the time, I remember on most of the convoys I did, they weren't all rough and they weren't all night time. We did a few in daylight when the weather probably was different, very cold but very clear. In fact, I can remember seeing sort of, I suppose you'd call them mirages at some stage, where you're looking out onto the horizon and you see a picture of a ship sort of upside down, it was, I assume it was from the ice to the sky, and it was coming backwards, So you're actually looking at other ships somewhere away that looks as if it's upside down.
Did you get a problem with icing up?
Yes. Oh well, in the winter when we were going through ice, I mean there was there the, when the ship was shipping them green, as soon as it landed on the forecastle, it was ice. There was ice on the guns. We probably couldn't use them at some times. It was loaded with ice, and we used to have to go every so often. We would go onto the forecastle or parts of the ship and chip the ice off as much as we could.
How did you chip it off?
Chipping hours and hoses, sort of flame hoses we had. Melting it down, but as soon as we probably got it off, it came on again. The guardrails, if you think a guardrail is about finger thick, by the time we'd started to go on the ice, it was probably about 4 or 5 inches in diameter on the guardrails alone. Very slippery. We used to rig a rope from the forecastle right down aft. Both sides of the walkway to go down, so that if anybody wanted to go aft, they were secured by a line from the forward mess decks, and they would be eased out to go down aft and then hauled back if they come back the other way. Very often, if your waves come, you used to try and to sort of watch the waves and try to get as far along the deck as you could before one come inboard. I think I swept off your feet and probably end up in the scuppers. But that was really rough. That was really rough. And the mess decks, most of the time they were probably swilling around with everything you could think of from whatever you had in the mess that was floating from side to side. Anything loose or you left anything loafing, it would be awash. Probably about 3 or 4 inches of muck and rubbish that was,
On the
used to float on
floor.
the floor. Yes, it was not very good in destroyers, I'm afraid. Not then day, anyway.
And what about the dangers? I mean, you mentioned
Well,
you.
the dangers mostly were from wolf packs, U-boats that we were going to meet anyway. If you didn't meet them one way, you met them the other way. If you didn't meet them going to Russia, you were going to get them coming back. In daylight, the biggest threat then was the bombing attacks.
To take the submarines first. So how much of a threat were they? I
They
mean.
were a complete threat. I mean, we were always you'd be going along in a convoy, and then a ship would get blown up. She would get torpedoed, a freighter or oil tanker or whatever was in the convoy. They were very at that stage. I think the U-boats were very clever because they used to lay underneath and come up in the middle of the convoy sometimes and pick off whatever they wanted. We couldn't do very much about it. We just used to charge around at the rate of knots, dropping depth charges, and then probably sitting on it. If we got an ASDIC ping, we'd probably sit on it for 24 hours while the convoy altered course somewhere, and then go back to meet the convoy again.
And were
I
they.
only I was only happy on that when the actual ship started to move around at speed instead of just loafing along at 14 knots.
As a destroyer, were you a target or were they mainly concentrated
No,
around the ship?
I don't think the escorts were ever much of a target, not from the submarines. They were after the stuff going to Russia. They wanted the ship. They weren't wasting much on us, I don't think. If they could target a big tanker or a ship that they would know be loaded with stuff for Russia, then those were the things they went after.
Now, did you ever get a submarine, or were you ever attributed with one?
No.
So you know.
Personally, Manchester wasn't no. The Matchless wasn't no.
What was it like when you dropped the depth charges? I mean, was it impressive? I mean, there's
Oh
always.
yes, very impressive. There was just a great gush of water, probably more of water coming up than there is on a bomb dropping in the water. The explosion that, and the amount of water that come, there'd be a big sort of bubble come up, and then that would go, and then there'd be this terrific plume of water coming out.
Did it shake
And
the
quite
ship
it,
or?
it well, it all depends how close you were to it. Some ships had their sterns nearly blown off with drop and depth charges to not enough depth, but we seemed to manage. And then we had, of course, the throw-in ones as well. You had to throw a
Hedgehog.
hedgehog thing. Well, they weren't hedgehogs then. They were just throwing. They were just they were the type of hedgehog, but they weren't hedgehogs at that time. They were just on a throw-in system, and it just threw the whole thing went out, and the throw-in mechanism underneath dropped off as it went in. But they would be thrown either side.
I've got you. Now, what about the air? I mean, the air threat was your business, much more than the submarine.
Yes. Air attacks. Well, we knew that we knew we were going to get air attacks at some stage. As soon as you saw the Focke Wulfs come around, that used to circle the convoy way out on the horizon in daylight. And of course, we had no aircraft or anything then. We had no we didn't have an aircraft carrier until later on. But this thing used to just float, just fly around the convoy, sending out its messages of what course we were, what the convoy consisted of, and then we knew that we were going to meet it. We were going to get attacked by something, usually by torpedo bombers.
Can you describe what a typical attack would be like? Or
A lot of noise. An awful lot of firing. I mean, the convoy would be firing. Every ship in the convoy would be firing. Everything to put up a blanket. Again, a blanket screen of explosives, if you will.
so you were talk to me a bit about what you were doing with the pom-pom. You mentioned it in training, but now we're in action. Tell me what you and your 8-barrel pom-pom was doing. It was putting up a wall.
Yes, it was just putting up as much ammunition up there as we could think of, in front of whatever was there in front of us. I mean, it was just a matter of firing. Probably nothing but just firing in the general direction of where the aircraft was coming in. But they'd be coming in from all sides. So the we would look after one side of the convoy, our other escorts would look after the other side. So you'd have a blanket going right round
Did
the
the pom-pom
convoy.
shells explode at a certain height, or did they just explode if they hit something?
No, they exploded at a certain height.
And so you'd set them so they'd go.
Well, they were already set. They were set to that. We didn't do any setting on those. They
Do you
just
know what height
exploded.
about it was?
No, I don't. Not really. You could see them exploding. You would see all the puffs of burst as you fired them. Probably a range. I don't know at that stage. I mean, aircraft is not travelling very fast. Not the speed of jets that they are today. They were just engines, so I mean, they were only doing 200 to 300 knots, probably nothing more than that. So I suppose the range would be, well, I don't suppose we were interested in much of the range,
You were just
as long as
firing.
we didn't want them inside. We were just firing to keep them away, hoping that we put enough stuff in front of a pilot to make him say, well, I'm not going through that lot.
And did you ever hit anything? Or do you remember
There,
any?
I don't remember. There was so much going on. There were play. We did bring planes down, but who was accredited to them would be a bit naughty, I'm afraid, with the amount of stuff that was going up at them.
So you just, yeah, you couldn't
You
tell.
couldn't really tell who got what.
What was it like when you were firing a barrage? I mean, on your gun. Tell us what it was like on the gun.
Pretty exciting, I think. At least we were doing something, even if we didn't hit anything. We felt, or I felt, as if at least I was doing something, rather than sort of being down below and not doing anything, I suppose. At least I was hitting back, I think, was my impression. That, buggy, I'm hitting at you, come and get me.
Were you nervous or?
I don't think I was ever nervous. I don't think it was time to be nervous. It wasn't that sort of. It was too much going on to be. Perhaps you get a bit nervous afterwards and a bit shaky, but there was too much. If you sort of went down the mess and thought about it, I suppose you thought, well, that was a near miss. Good gracious, But other than that, I don't think so. I think it was, as I said, there was too much going on. Far too much going on. I mean, most of the actions only used to last, I don't know, a couple of hours, I suppose, until the aircraft flew off again, and then perhaps you'd wait about a few hours before another one would start. It all depends how far you were and what your way big your convoy was, I think.
Would the aircraft concentrate on the merchantmen as well, or would they
Not
occasionally?
necessarily. They just came in and fired their dropped their torpedoes at whatever they could find.
Any hits or close
Oh
escapes?
yes, there was always one or two ships that used to get sunk. I've never been in. I don't think I've had a convoy that I did. I did about 10 to 14 convoys, and I don't think there was one convoy that either going or coming that we didn't lose at least two or three merchantmen, at least.
But was the Maxis attacked itself?
No, not no, no. There was no. I mean, you could never tell whether you were being attacked or not because they were attacking everything, unless you were on your own, which we never were anyway.
So what else? So you'd have these air attacks. Any other risk? Was there ever attacked by surface raiders or at that stage?
At that stage, no. There was always the threat. There was always little things about the Tirpitz was coming, or the, or whatever, whatever was in Norway at the time. There was always the threat of us being attacked, but we always knew that there was also a fleet of the home fleet were also at sea at that time, although they might be 200, 300, 400 miles away,
But they were covering.
but they were covering. They would be between us and Norway, going up, towards the coast of Norway, while we were going up to Bear Island way. Jan Mayen Island and Bear Island and right up north, and then we'd come down into Murmansk to the Kola Fjord. Arriving in Murmansk,
Tell me about that.
I'm thinking about it. Dismal, dreary, cold, always snow, nothing there bar a wooden jetty most of the time.
Was it Murmansk or Poliana?
Well, it was in Pollyanna, but Murmansk was the main. It was in Kola Field, Kola Inlet. So it was Pollyanna we went in, and that's where the oilers and things were as well. We'd unload. The merchant ships would go alongside and unload, mostly by women. Women, I say. I don't know whether we ever knew they were women, but they. My first impression of a Russian woman was. Like something like a big bear. They were big, and I think it was all women that practically all women that worked on the dock sides, except for the Russian sentries.
You
But there
didn't
was
speak to them.
no. I can't. For the first three or four journeys to Russia, I don't think I went. I went ashore anywhere. I think the officers might have gone ashore for a walk or something. But I don't think we actually went ashore. We never used to stay in very long anyway. We used to stay in oil ship, and there'd be a convoy waiting to come back again.
Now, later you did go ashore. What were your impressions when you did go
The
ashore?
impressions going ashore in Pollyanna, I suppose it was, or Manx, I call it, because I don't think I could say any other name. There wasn't a lot there. There was a red canteen, a red officer's canteen, which we never went into. The officers did, and I believe they went in there to organize dances, I think. We went ashore mostly for walks and a look around the place, but there was nothing there to see anyway. It was very drab, and the houses were very dismal for what houses there were. I think the Russians kept away from us. I mean, it was a time of all I can remember is I remember school children with loads of rubles because then they couldn't buy anything with it anyway, and everything was everything every I'm looking at their books if we ever got hold of any books, their school was always every page had the picture of Stalin on. Everything was Stalin wherever you went, Joe Stalin. We weren't greeted very well in Russia. I don't think they could believe that we only came into Russia with so few ships, that we'd lost so many on the way. I don't think they ever believed us, really, from my impression of them.
And what were the, so you'd not be in long.
No, we'd only be in perhaps 4 or 5, perhaps less than that, sometimes 3 days at the most. And most of that time we would be sort of getting a few provisions that we could get, especially off the off any cruiser that was in there that had come in. I mean, the cruisers used to come and stay in there while they were covering convoys backwards and forth, like the Edinburgh and the Belfast. We might go alongside them and pick up a few stores like fresh meat and potatoes and bread. Getting back to messing, to food on these Russian convoys on a destroyer, it was very difficult. As I've said before, if you had a good cook, or they weren't cooks, they were actually seamen, but
But
they
tell
were
us about the cook. I forgot I was going to ask you about the cooks of the mess. Tell me
the
about them.
cooks of the mess were seamen. You detailed them off. The leading hand of the mess detailed whoever he wanted to be cook of the mess for that day or whatever period of time. He'd have two, and they were responsible for preparing a meal and having seen that it was taken to the galley, collected from the galley when it was cooked, and put it on the mess to be dished out.
Now, did you ever do this?
Yes,
And what was it? Tell
unfortunately.
me about your time as cook of the mess.
Well, I'm coming to that. It's very difficult. We had to prepare for whatever we got. Now, we didn't always have meat and potatoes. I mean, they would run out. We'd probably start the journey with them, but they would run out. So we'd come down to tin stuff, whatever we could find. Most of the meals that I remember when we were on Russian convoys was what we called a pot mess.
Now, what's that?
Everything put into a pot and stewed, whatever you could put into it, practically. And that used to last about 3 days. And then breakfast would be, if we had bread, it would be just toast. Supper would be probably sandwiches or what. If we had bread, it would be some sort of whatever we could put on it, jam or whatever. Very frugal, as I remember, on destroyers. We didn't have the cooks. If it was rough, the cooks were very difficult. They couldn't cook anything anyway. So most of the time, we were probably on just cutting up sandwiches if we had the bread or biscuits. We didn't feed very well, I'm afraid, most of the time. We either fed or we didn't. And this is where I'm coming back to. If you had a couple of good seamen that could cook or could rustle up something, then you were all right. We had flour and we could make, cakes or puddings
Now, you weren't so
with
good from the
flour.
sound of it.
But I wasn't very clever at cooking. I remember one Christmas going up there, and I thought I'd make a Christmas cake, says he jollily. And I spent all the afternoon while everybody else was off, those that were off watch were all sleeping around me on the bed, on the stools, and some in their hammocks. And I thought I'd make this Christmas cake. And it was in a dish, these flat dishes, which you leave in the. So I mixed the stuff, but unfortunately, I only used ordinary flour rather than self-raising. So when I'd taken down to the galley, and when I came back from there to put it on the mess and take it from the galley that had cooked it, it had still only rose to, it was still only that thick.
Bandage.
Yeah, as I'd put it in, all they'd done is browned it off. But that went. They used to slice it. I got ribbed for it quite a lot, but they used to come off watch and they used to slice this thing up. And we had a stanchion with an electric heater on it, one of these small electric heaters with about 2 bars. And they used to cut it up in slices and toast it and put jam on it.
Now, what meals would you cook normally then? I mean,
If it was fine and we had the meat and the potatoes, then we would have a roast. We would buy the tin of beans or peas or whatever we wanted as the veg from the canteen, and that would go into as the veg. I mean, carrots and things, I don't think we ever heard of unless we got a tin carrot, and we were fortunate if the naffy had whatever the naffy had. So, as I said, sometimes we would feed very well. And other times we didn't. Not because necessarily we didn't have the food, but sometimes we weren't able to prepare it or cook it anyway.
Now, what about the return trips? Were they less busy? I mean, I presume the ships were empty, right?
Well, most of the ships were empty. I think they used to bring back some wood and stuff like that, I think, for use in our own factories. But most of the time they were empty. But they still got the same sort of attack when you got past Bear Island coming home. They were still subject to attack, though probably not as forceful as the ones going up loaded. But we would still get them. We would still have, and we still had the sea, of course, to contend with, and the cold. So there was never a sort of uneventful trip, really.
Now, was fatigue a problem? I mean,
Fatigue was very much a problem,
tell me about it.
especially if you were in. I mean, the four on and four off, or watches every. I mean, you'd be on watch for 4 hours. Go down to your mess deck. By the time you took your coat off, you were back at action stations again, or something. You know, there'd be an alarm of something. Either somebody had picked up a ping, an ASDIC contact, or thought he had, and everybody would have to close up again, and we'd be running around then for half an hour trying to search for it. You'd go back again and probably do something else, and 10 minutes later you'd be back on the guns again. It was that sort of trip that you
Did
would
it
never.
affect you?
We got very haggard and tired, I remember, but I felt sorry for the skipper of destroyers. I mean, I know for a fact that they probably had to be doped up a little bit to keep going, because they'd probably be on that bridge sometimes for 2 or 3 days at a time. I mean, remember, a trip like this would take about 14 days. To get from Iceland to Manx. And it was probably very difficult for them. I mean, they'd want to be called. If they went to their sea cabin just behind the bridge, they'd be probably called every 5 minutes, because something would happen somewhere. Perhaps a merchant ship would say they'd spotted a feather of a U-boat. Probably hadn't. Probably a white horse, the white things on it. But most of them were panic stricken anyway.
Now, what did you think of your skipper? Do you remember who he was?
I can't remember his name. The Lieutenant Commander. I've got the idea that it was Lieutenant Commander Melville, but it's six. But I don't know.
Was he a good skipper?
Yes, I think they were all good skippers. As far as I remember in that time, I mean, skippers were good skippers. They were good seamen. They were trained, and they were good destroyer. I mean, he was a destroyer man, and most of the lieutenant commanders in charge of destroyers were probably all destroyer men. They went through and stayed until they become Captain D's, probably.
Now, what about the other officers? Were they a good bunch?
Yes, they were all, as far as I can remember, I never had any problems with any of the officers, all the petty officers, all the chiefs, come to that.
Was it a happy ship?
Yes, we were a very happy ship.
How could it? I mean, they say ships are happy or unhappy. What made the Matchless happy? Was it the officers or the men or
The
what?
officers and the men themselves, I suppose, there was never any animosity between them. It was everybody got on with everybody else. Whether it was the environment or the conditions we were in, I don't know. But everybody seemed to pull together.